The Indian Mojo Show!
Hello, men, women, and puppets. It's the Indian Mojo Show. I'm your host, Jack Gardner. And this week we have Crew Hunter on the show, in addition to our lovely co-hosts, Indy Jones.
Hi.
And Jeremy Brown.
Hello. Brilliant job, Jack.
Most of the Crew Hunter. I don't know. It wasn't really up to your standard.
I've had two opportunities. This is your first chance, as far as I know. So I think you did a fabulous job.
I think it was the best yet.
I would agree with that.
Let me put it this way. It was the best introduction to this show that I've ever done.
You forgot. You got the name wrong, though.
Huh?
You got the name wrong.
Yeah, that's what? True.
Our name, the show, the name of the show.
The show.
It's the Jacked Up Indian Mojo Show.
Yes,
that's right.
That's much better.
That's right. We are. There are three of us. And I am a part of that.
You are, especially when you have your mic back. So welcome back.
That's true. And this time I got my new mic. That's the same kind of mic that I've had two times previous. And this time I wised up and I bought a 2-year warranty on it. So now no matter what happens to it, I'll have another one and I won't have to spend any more money on a stupid mic that breaks in a week.
So let me ask, Jack, you're a pretty smart guy by most people's standards.
Thank
Why
you.
Would you buy a mic and then have a break and then buy another mic of the same kind that you have to actually pay for, not just trade in, have it break, and then try it again? That just doesn't make sense.
Okay, well, the first time it was my fault because I knocked it over and it smacked the ground and just right, so it broke. And the second time is from what I read about it, is a fairly rare occurrence where the software inside the mic got corrupted and there's nothing anyone can do to repair it. And literally the service guy that I contacted about it at the company was like, yeah, you're going to have to return that. The problem was that mic I bought off eBay for like $10 off normal price.
Figures.
It was still in the box, but it was not functioning after a week, so I had to get a new one. But this one has a warranty, so it's going to be good for 2 years. And I won't have to worry about it again.
So do you still have the one you bought on eBay?
I do.
You know what a corrupt man would do, or a lesser man would do, right?
Try and repair
it. Jeremy would do.
I wouldn't do that. I would think about it, but I wouldn't do it. You would take that one to the place that you bought the new one and tell them it didn't work, and then just get your money back.
Well, I got it off of Amazon.com, and I have to assume that they have, like, the serial numbers and...
Amazon's pretty good. That. You don't want to screw them, because they're always there to help you out if you need it, so...
Yeah.
Well, we're glad to have you back with a mic. You sound much better when we can hear you.
I'm glad to be back, and I'm also glad that you can hear me.
And you only missed one show, so it's not like it was, you know, it was quite a while, but it didn't really impact a whole lot of shows.
So you're saying that you didn't really miss me, and that you could have just continued on?
We thought about it. We did. But we changed our mind. That's just how it is. So how was your Thanksgiving, Jack?
My Thanksgiving was pretty good. And so... The big news in my career life is that I finally got my first freelance piece sent off in a way, and that should be showing up in print in a couple months. So keep an eye out for that in official Xbox magazine.
And it's an article about how the PlayStation is better than Xbox, is that right?
No, it's an article about how the Jacked Up Indian Mojo Show is getting their... an app on Xbox Live so
nice.
That everyone can listen to it. It's going to be on the front page. No,
that's not true. Don't actually expect that. Anybody? That
would make me an Xbox fanboy overnight.
I wrote about Dragon Age 3, just what we want, what fans of Dragon Age want in Dragon Age 3, and what needs to happen from a fan's point of view. Because I consider myself a fan of the Dragon Age franchise. I mean, I've put over 200 hours into both games, so...
So 400 hours or...
No, just 200 hours total.
Okay.
Into, like, Dragon Age 1 and Dragon Age Origins and Awakening and the DLC and Dragon Age 2.
That's definitely doable. Well, since we're already talking about you, Jack, what you know, you got a job, kind of, and you had a good Thanksgiving. Have you been playing any games?
Yeah, I've been playing a lot of games. I finished playing The Walking Dead, which we can't really talk about, because I know...
But we will talk about it on the next show.
I know you guys haven't finished it yet. I also started playing Dead Island, so I have a lot of zombies in my life at the moment.
Are you playing Dead Island on PC, or...?
Yeah, on PC. It's really interesting to me to compare The Walking Dead to Dead Island, because they're both zombie apocalypse kind of scenarios. Mm-hmm. But they're very different in their take on the zombie apocalypse, because Dead Island focuses on the zombies, whereas Walking Dead focuses on the survivors. And ultimately, zombies aren't very interesting by themselves, you know? It's
right.
They're just an obstacle and a means to bring out extreme scenarios in the people who survive the apocalyptic scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And so The Walking Dead to me is 100 times more interesting than Dead Island. And Dead Island is still really fun to play. I really enjoy playing it, but the character interaction, and I say character with air quotes around it, is like non-existent, and that would be the most interesting part of that game. And really the only character development you get in whatever character you pick is right at the very beginning, where the character kind of describes themselves in character select.
Yeah, I think it'd be awesome if there could be a game made, and maybe Left 4 Dead is like this, I haven't played it, where you do have a combination of... Because The Walking Dead video game does have a lot more story, obviously, and it's a lot better written, and it keeps you more intrigued, you know, with the characters. But, let's face it, the gameplay is basically non-existent. So, mm-hmm. It's not a fun game. I would never call The Walking Dead game a fun game. I call it a great game in a lot of ways and a very interesting game, but not necessarily a fun game like Dead Island. I had a ton of fun playing Dead Island with other people, just mindless zombie-killing fun.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, but at the same time, I would say that while it's not fun, The Walking Dead's gameplay mechanics are... They add to the story experience. Like, they work together with what they're trying to do in the scene.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? It works well together, whereas Dead Island's gameplay is really fun, but it's completely dissociated from, like, what...
Sure.
...the story it is trying to tell. And
well, Jack, wait. We're talking Dead Island here, right? And it had that amazing trailer with going backwards with the little girl and stuff. The story in that game's amazing. What are you talking about?
That trailer is amazing. I think that's one of the best trailers of all time. But...
Too bad the character...
So there you go. That proves it.
See, but I think maybe I didn't state my point very clearly. That was my point, was that the Walking Dead game is great, but it's not... In my opinion, the gameplay isn't that fun, and if they had made it more of a hack-and-slash explorer, you know, open-world exploring game, I don't know that they would have been able to leave that same atmosphere and those same elements that make that game so wonderful in it, because it just wouldn't have worked the same. It would have been too spread out. So
I agree with you. Yeah,
I think something in the middle that did both parts really well would be truly amazing.
Mm-hmm. So those two games I've been playing, and I've also been playing Mark of the Ninja, which I love that game.
Amazing.
That game is the Ninja Gaiden that we never got. That is the new ninja game that I hold up all other ninja games to from now on.
Stealth in general.
Yeah,
all
I mean,
stealth games need to learn from that game. Even 3D games.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And so I'd really like to talk about it more, but I know we got to get to you guys, so.
Well, maybe we can come back to it.
I've been playing Mark the Ninja, and I am just on the cusp of finishing Ico for the first time.
Okay. I'm
playing it in on the HD collection for the PS3. And, I was talking to Daniel about it earlier, and even though that game came out 11 years ago, playing it in HD today still feels like I'm playing a next-gen game. Like, I get that feeling like, wow, this game is revolutionary. Why aren't more games like this?
I got that feeling. Like, I didn't go back and play Ico because I played that back in 2000 whatever when it came out, and I played like the first little bit and just couldn't get into it again. But mm-hmm. playing Shadow of the Colossus for the first time this year was like, I'd never played a game like that before, and I was just like, this is incredible. Why had I never played this before? This is one of the most amazing games I've ever played. And yeah, I know what you mean. Like, it's just like, there are mechanics in there and things that game does, and the same with Ico, I agree. Like, they just do things that games still don't really get right.
I've never gotten much into the whole Sony gaming library, and I've been slowly accumulating a list of games that, if I had a choice of picking which ones to cross over to a different platform, Shadow of the Colossus would definitely be one of my top picks. You know, if that came up for Xbox or PC, I definitely play that the first chance I got.
Do you have a PlayStation, Hunter?
No, I never owned a single PlayStation in my whole life.
Oh, well, if you ever do get one.
GameCube, PC, and Xbox, but never a PS.
If you ever do get one, I would say that's definitely one of the games that everybody always says you have to play, and I'm certainly not going to disagree with them.
Yeah.
Even though I haven't played them.
Yeah, Shadow of the Colossus is probably my favorite game of all time. Yeah. You should get on that. By the way, I know that I say Ico wrong. I know it's supposed to be pronounced Ico, but I've just always said it as Ico.
It's okay, Jack.
I just have a lot of issues with it. Cause
your grandma, my grandma, Ico, Ico, Ine. That, right?
Potato, potato, tomato, tomato.
Ico and Ico.
Kratos, Kratos, you know.
Who says Kratos?
This one dude that worked at GameStop said that once, and I
really?
At him, and I thought he was like trying to troll me.
Wow!
No, he kept saying it, and
you see, it's totally not nearly as intimidating. Kratos, God of War.
Well, it would be one thing if like the narrator in the game didn't say Kratos.
Right.
It's very clearly Kratos. It's not, you know, Kratos. Anyway, whatever. What a tool that GameStop employee was. So, Hunter, welcome to the Jacked Up Indian Mojo Show. We didn't get a real good chance to welcome you at the beginning of the show.
Thank you for having me.
We really appreciate that you listen to the show, and it means a lot to us, so it's awesome to have you on.
Yep, when I can.
Excellent. So,
thanks.
How was your Thanksgiving?
Really, really good. I was mostly doing architecture-related stuff over the whole Thanksgiving, and I didn't play any games over Thanksgiving break, but I still was glued to GameInformer.com and tried to keep up to date on the news and blogs and whatnot. Ate a lot of good turkey.
That's good.
Yeah.
And you're from the great Pacific Northwest area, correct?
Yes. Yes, specifically Oregon and Washington.
And are you bummed about the Ducks? I was kind of bummed.
Oh man, we could make an entire show based off of what I have to say about the Ducks. You know, once Oregon lost, I was there for that game. I hadn't gone to a home game for 2 years, and the one game I go within 2 years. It's like Bad Luck Hunter or something, you know, goes to first Oregon home game, Oregon loses, you know.
Oh, man. They had a tough schedule, especially towards the end of the season, but, to lose against Stanford, and to not even score any points, I mean, Oregon is the team that scores 50 points a game easily. It was crazy.
Yeah, I think a lot of things went against Oregon, you know, that game that shouldn't have happened. You know, you have a lot of defensive players out, you know, permanently, some of them permanently for the rest of the season, and, you know, defense got beat up from games against USC and Cal, but, you know, a lot of it was just Stanford really pulled their stuff together, you know,
Stanford's a good defensive team.
Coordinators, you know.
Stanford really is a good team, but still.
I mean, that was a freshman quarterback was in charge of Stanford, and that was his first home game at Austin Stadium, which is notorious for its rowdy fans, and well, he pulled off a win, so.
Good, it'll be one to remember forever. Now I'm forced to root for Notre Dame just to keep the SEC from winning the BCS again. But, I suppose we should talk about something other than college football.
The games that I have been playing, I still play some Gears of War 3. You know, I turn to Gears multiplayer whenever I have a deadline. You know, I have to get back to class soon or something. So, you know, pull up a few games there. And I used to have a 3.0 KD ratio, but it's slowly dropping because the only people left there are MLG players. And I just get my butt handed to me every single time. And then a lot of Assassin's Creed 3. I've put in a good chunk of time in that game so far.
How are you liking that?
You know, I really enjoy story the most out of all facets of a game. You know, gameplay is great, graphics, so what? You know, it's the narrative. You know, it's how you tie these characters and scenes together that really gets me. And so I really didn't mind that the tutorial really took 8 hours, you know, because I was engrossed in Connor's story from, you know, prior to his birth all the way to, you know, when he dons the assassin robes and becomes a full-fledged killer. But
yeah, I like playing as the early colonial, you know, that early colonial area. I think that's neat. Yeah.
My only gripes would be some of the glitches, and, you know, we've heard a lot about this from Assassin's Creed, that it's such a huge game that maybe if Ubisoft postponed it a bit more, you know, maybe tried to work out a few extra kinks, might have been a smoother experience. But yeah, one glitch in particular stands out, where I was at the docks in Boston, and just for the heck of it, I decided to take out an entire battalion with my fists. And I got done with that, but the guys just kept on coming, and about 10 more guys later, I started realizing that these guys, I wasn't anywhere in particular in Boston. I just happened to come across a respawn point for the NPCs. And so I just said, okay, well, let's see how long I can go with this. And I was there for an hour. I timed it. I was there for an hour beating up guys with my bare hands.
Nice.
And, like, by the time I would die, there was 60, 70 guys just rolling on the floor.
I like piling them up in the corner.
How was the frame rate after all of that?
it was pretty slow. My poor Xbox was hating me at that point in time. But yeah, really, really great game. I'd recommend it to anybody who's a fan of the action genre. Superb combat, and aside from the little glitch here and there, it's a great game. Could look a little bit better, but considering how gigantic the world is, you can't really blame.
I think parts of it look brilliant, and then parts of it look kind of
yeah.
It goes to show I could have used a little more polish. I think the most annoying glitch, and I'm not even sure that it's a full glitch that I've came across in that game so far, is every now and then when I go into the loading screen, it'll just take forever to cycle into the world to the point where I'm thinking like the game froze and I almost stopped to reset it. And, not every time, just every now and then that'll happen, where you're kind of running around in the Animus doing nothing, waiting for the world to load. But I haven't seen a whole lot of other glitches. A couple hanging horses in the middle of the air and some weapons levitating and some fruit levitating, but nothing too major so far for me.
Yeah, another funny one is when this horse was standing on top. The horse mechanics on this game have just got awful. Your horse gets stuck on every leaf and little pebble, come up to a river, you might as well just jump off the horse, and then as you cross to the other side, just call it. But this horse somehow got up on top of a roof and was trying to get off, and at one point it got stuck and just kept on like flipping in the air and all this other stuff. It was pretty entertaining.
Horse acrobatics. Hunter, how long have you been hanging out at Game Informer Online?
Past 2 years, really.
Yeah.
I started March 2010, and I've been on the homepage ever since, and been blogging ever since. And I'd say my only claim to fame really has been when I think it was Ben Hansen or some staff member on Game
Informer. That was Jeff Macaravia.
I think I butchered that. And if you listen to this man, I apologize. I was just really proud when he mentioned my blogs on blogging as a good guide. So
you should be proud. That was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
For sure. That editorial or that article that Jeff wrote created this huge influx of bloggers, and so you indirectly were responsible for all the new bloggers in the last 6 months or so. So good job.
Yeah, ushered in a new generation.
I've always enjoyed reading your blogs. I think that there's the right amount of humor in them for me, so I've appreciated them. Good job.
I have tons of ideas that just due to time constraints, I haven't had any time to put them into fruition. One of them has been in draft format for going on two years now. So it's but thanks.
You got a pretty awesome profile page with all your gaming pictures as well.
I mean to ask you about that. Is it annoying? Because I've been going through Google and DeviantArt, and some of the stuff that people have posted is just phenomenal. And
I think it's awesome.
Yeah.
The only thing that every time I go there to leave a comment, I end up looking at the pictures for something that I planned on. So that's not annoying. That just shows that it's cool. You're going to school for architecture, is that right?
Yeah, I'm currently in my junior year in architecture. I'm currently working on a multimodal transit center. So, multimodal, just multiple modes of transport coming into one place. And I got my final review on Friday. So usually for that, you worked for a couple of months on this one project and put a lot of blood and sweat into it, mostly literally, you know, because sometimes you cut yourself and your blood goes onto the models that you're making. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun so far. I'm glad I am where I am. So,
do you find yourself when you're playing games like Assassin's Creed, for example, especially the ones that took place in Italy and Rome? I'm being a bit stereotypical here, but do you find yourself spending time looking at the architecture because
yeah,
of that?
Yeah, I do. In fact, sometimes I critique it, like, the door shouldn't be there, or, you know, structurally, that the whole building would fall down. I don't understand how it's working like that.
Oh, that Michelangelo, what did he know? He wasn't.
Yeah. it kind of ties into this whole theory I've been having where I think video games have been getting short shrift from the education community. I think games like Fallout 3, even more recent ones like Medieval Warfare. I think that when it comes to education, kids can learn a lot through simulation. And for an architecture student, playing the upcoming Sim City game is a must in my opinion. And for a history major, going through Fallout 3's destroyed remnants of Washington D.C. is a rare treat. So.
That's a pretty cool thought. I actually like that. Well, welcome to the show. It's been awesome having you on so far, and we look forward to getting to know you a little bit better and hope that you stay a long-time listener.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm sorry for my long rants if they were too boring, but thank you.
Not at all, man.
No, not at all.
Our show is very familiar with long rants.
Get right in. Daniel Jones.
Yeah, what's going on?
How's life on the West Coast?
It's good. I get a job, just not a video game job, but a job, and it'll keep me out here, so I can keep looking for writing work. So that's exciting. I've been playing games too.
Yeah, like what?
Yeah. Nothing really. Well, okay. Yeah, one thing new. Gravity Rush on the Vita. I've been playing a little bit of that. Not too much of it.
Did you agree with PlayStation Plus?
Yes, I did.
Nice.
Yeah. People should take advantage of that business. That is good.
For sure.
So how is Gravity Rush? I have a shirt of that game, but I've never played it because I don't have a Vita.
that's funny. No, it's good. It's good. It's really neat. Like, the design and the story are really neat. They're just fun and quirky in kind of a Miyazaki kind of way. I like it.
That's high praise.
I haven't heard of it. Could you give like a brief summary of like what the game's
about? So you're this girl Cat, in this like floating city thing.
Girl named Cat or a girl Cat?
A girl named Cat. At the beginning of the game, she doesn't even remember her name. She's got amnesia, of course. But, she has this magical cat walking around with her, and the cat gives her, like, these powers to, to move around the world and, like, upset gravity. So she can, you press a button and you float in the air, and then you point your reticle at an area wherever you want and you'll go to it. And if you hit a wall or something, the screen turns so that it looks like you're standing on flat, even ground, but you're actually standing on like the side of a building.
That's really neat.
It is neat. And I was worried that like the Vita would need to be used for like the gyro controls and stuff for all that stuff, but you don't need to use that at all. And the combat is probably the weak point because it's very simple. Who's scraping something across their mic?
You could hear that?
Yep. All
right. Yeah. I was sharpening my knife.
Oh.
Oh, jeez.
Seriously?
Man, the end of the world's coming. You gotta be prepared.
You don't know where I live, right? Speaking of where you live, Daniel, you said you were on the West Coast too?
Yeah, I am in San Francisco.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yep.
Yep.
I'm trying to get a job writing about video games, so I'm living on my friend's floor at the moment, and yeah, so that's going. I will say I did have an interview, a phone interview with a video game magazine. That should narrow it down since there aren't many of those left. And I think the interview went really well. It was before Thanksgiving, so I'm going to be following up on that.
You haven't heard that that's a no yet. You just haven't heard that it's a yes, right?
Right, exactly. I really do think the interview went well, but we'll see. So I've been playing Gravity Rush, and I'm enjoying it. That's kind of been like what I've been playing the most. Although last night I went back and played a bunch of Dishonored.
Nice.
Because I just kept thinking about that game, like, after I finished it, and just kept wanting to go back and see how I could do. And turns out I'm a lot better at that game than I was when I first played it.
Is it because you played Mask of the Ninja? Mark of the Ninja?
No, I played that before I played Dishonored. I think it's just because I know the environments now, and I know, like, I'm exploring more. I'm taking my time. I also was reviewing it, and I was trying to get it done within 3 days.
Yeah.
So I was kind of rushing through and taking the quick ways. And now I'm, like, going through and making sure I, like, hunt out all the different runes and find the and do the special objectives and just taking my time. And when I'm taking my time and just enjoying it, I love it. It's an amazing game. And I loved it when I reviewed it, but I like it a lot more even now. So
it's a lot more enjoyable when you can play it at your own leisure and you're not worried about getting through it real, real fast.
Exactly. Yeah. So that and the only other thing is Bastion on my phone.
Okay.
Because I haven't played Bastion like a dozen times already, so I figured one more time wouldn't hurt.
Now it's on your phone.
Wonderful game.
Yep.
You're going to finish up The Walking Dead Episode 5 this week, do you think?
Certainly.
Now, Daniel, just out of curiosity, you have a mobile phone platform and the PS Vita. What would you say is the I don't think I'd get a handheld platform, mostly because, you know, I have my iPhone, you know, which has apps, so why would I need to bother? So just out of curiosity, what would be your reasoning for a gamer to, you know, on the go to also get, you know, a handheld console?
Yes, Daniel, what is your reasoning for that?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess the thing about the Vita is that it just has some pretty fun games on it. They're not, you know, I played MLB The Show on my Vita, like, my entire flight back from Connecticut. I took a little trip home about a month ago and then came back, and that whole flight, I was just playing the baseball game until the battery died on my Vita. And, I mean, for stuff like that, it's fantastic. I'm not going to take it on the Muni with me here in San Francisco because, one, I just don't take things like that on the Muni. Because I don't trust people, but
good call.
But yeah, so like for that kind of stuff, I don't know if it's that great, but it's just fun. There's a lot of great games on it. Golden Abyss is awesome. Sound Shapes is one of my favorite games of the year. So and I only play that on my Vita. I never touch the PS3 version.
And
there's just a bunch of
just
great
remember,
games.
Just remember, let's take a moment to remember that Daniel created a highly acclaimed level in Sound Shapes.
That he did.
Good job, Daniel.
Nice.
Plus, I think that for people that actually like, you know, gaming, like full-on retail games, the Vita has a lot of games that are much more than just apps, you know, where you do have the luxury of having the thumb sticks and the, you know, directional pad and the shoulder buttons.
Well, that was my next point, is that the Vita games that I've played, I've probably sunk like 10 to 20 hours into each of them. Between MLB The Show, Uncharted, Sound Shapes, and what's the other one? Assassin's Creed Liberation. I've played those a ton, and the mobile games I've enjoyed this year have been like Rayman Jungle Run and Bastion now, and a little bit of Sword and Sorcery. But other than that, I haven't really sunk that many hours into mobile games. If I play those, it's usually tops like 2 hours total. Like total time played is 2 hours per mobile app, which for your value, I mean,
yeah.
for a dollar, $5 or whatever, that's pretty damn good. But still, if you want like longer, more involved gaming experiences on the go, I don't think there's anything as good as the Vita. But that's
I do think that gap is certainly, you know, becoming less. But yeah, there's still two distinct experiences in my opinion in my book. I did play a little bit of Lego Lord of the Rings over Thanksgiving on the Vita, and I enjoyed that quite a bit.
I want to play it.
I would recommend doing so.
Speaking about Thanksgiving, we didn't ask you, Jeremy, about your whole
Thanksgiving. Yeah, what about you? How you been?
I've been all right. So I went to see some family over Thanksgiving, and that was pretty cool, I guess, in some ways, and sucked in others. But yeah, you know, that's just the way life goes. That's where family is.
Did you at least get to eat good turkey?
I did, and I didn't have to cook it.
Oh, the best!
Usually, when I go somewhere for dinner, people always expect me to show up early and do most of the work.
But this time you didn't.
There's like this unwritten rule. Like, if you know a doctor, you don't go to their house or invite them over and ask them to look at your foot fungus, right? You know, if you know a mechanic, you don't invite them over and then, you know, have your toolbox sitting there and say, oh, well, since you were here, why not, you know, go out.
I have this toolbox conveniently.
Yeah, and change the head gasket on my truck or whatever. But when you work with food, when you're a chef, for some reason, that's what everybody expects you to do when you go to their house, is to
cook for them
or help them or whatever, which is cool, don't get me wrong. I just think it's funny how the food industry is different than other industries in that way. But yeah, it was nice. I got to eat some good turkey stuffing, you know, mashed potatoes, all that good stuff. Spent the better part of 3 days in a cheap motel. Did about 20 minutes of Black Friday shopping at 8:30 at night on Friday. And that's about it.
How was the Black Friday? Did anybody else go to Black Friday shopping?
No, I hate going out on Black Friday. I just sit inside and I look at the new Steam deals as they come up.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't get it much either.
Even that late at night in a smaller town like Kalispell, I wasn't at Walmart or the mall or anywhere. I was at a sporting goods store. I went to two different sporting goods stores. And the one wasn't too busy, but the other one was just packed, and they didn't have any, you know, like, great, great specific deals that people were in there for. So it was crazy how many people were out, you know, a half hour before they closed, and all the stuff that you know, was really, really on sale had been gone for hours. People were still out just spending money left and right.
Did anybody go to the Thursday? Didn't they do this controversial thing where they like opened it on Wednesday night too?
A lot
like,
of places are open on Thursday now. I won't support that. I think it's wrong.
No.
Yeah, that's not right.
I mean, for Black Friday, people already have to go in on Thursday anyway, just because the stores open right at midnight. I think it's terrible to make them come in at, like, you know, what were they making them come in at? Like 5 p.m. or something like that?
Well, I know a lot of the stores, like Shopko and Kmart and probably Walmart, they were open on Thursday, like normal business hours. It was insane.
But I mean, like, think of the shifts those people must have to go through.
I don't, you know, I guess that's not really why I think it's wrong. I think it's wrong because you should be spending that day with your family and whatnot.
Well, I think,
to be honest, if you're going to sign up for a retail job, you know you're going to be working
crazy hours.
But that said, if it's the first year they've ever done it and nobody expected it, then yeah, it is kind of wrong.
I agree with you. If it's a holiday, you should spend that holiday with your family.
I worked many, many holidays, so I don't have a lot of sympathy for people that have to work holidays.
What a jerk.
It's got to be done, man.
Jeez.
Somebody has to work them. But I saw that. I didn't notice it until I got home because a bunch of shows had DVR'd. But watching some of those shows, I saw Walmart commercials, and they had this, like, guarantee if you got there between, you know, like 10 and 11 a.m. on Black Friday and wanted a specific thing, that you were guaranteed to get it. So I guess, like, if it wasn't in stock, they would give you a rain check or a ticket to come back and get it when it was in stock at that price. So hopefully that helped the trampling a little bit for the people that were trying to get the $99 laptops.
Yeah, I saw some crazy YouTube videos of that night with some trampling going on.
Do you know why they call it Black Friday?
There was a lot of fighting over Skylanders, actually, in one video.
Why, Daniel?
You know why, right? You're just looking for an answer?
Well, I have a theory. I'm just wondering if I'm right.
Well, they call it Black Friday because it puts all the businesses in the black for the year.
That's what I heard.
Financially.
It's out of the red and into the black.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that's cool.
What was that, your theory, or did you have one that was more fun?
Oh, that's what I had heard, but I just wasn't positive that that was accurate. I mean, it made sense, but I just
That's why.
Just wanted confirmation. So as far as games, no, I haven't been playing a whole lot. I did try to play Dead Island with some other GIOers, but I got a late start on the road on Saturday and didn't make it home on time to play with them. I did play a little bit of Assassin's Creed. I still haven't got too far into the game. Haven't even got to Connor's story yet, so that shows you how far I am.
I agree with the GI recommendations that they have, where, you know, wait until Connor grows up to actually go through and explore the world. It's just easier that way.
Oh, okay, that's good to know. Just a few minutes of Lego Lord of the Rings on the Vita, and not much else as far as... I played some Yahtzee, you know, with dice, where you got to get three of a kind, four of a kind, Yahtzee, you know, that sort of stuff. Not much gaming-wise, though this week I will play Episode 4 and 5 of The Walking Dead, and hopefully some Borderlands 2, some more Dishonored, and some more Assassin's Creed 3.
I will say that when you guys play through Episode 5, you should have a box of tissues by. Just saying.
Really?
Yeah.
I have tissues when I'm playing Mario. I cry at everything.
Why are you not at the castle?
I'm looking forward to the day when a game really makes me cry. The closest game has ever come is Episode 2 of Half-Life 2, which, Jeremy, you wouldn't really understand because you didn't play it. So.
Yep.
The end of that, oh, man.
Heartbreaking.
I just stood there.
Was somebody talking about Half-Life?
Yes.
Yes.
So I'd like to play another game that makes me cry.
So, any interesting things in the gaming world that you guys want to discuss?
I kind of want to discuss this thing called Amnesia Fortnite.
Okay.
What's
that all about?
Well, the developer Double Fine, led by Tim Schafer, it's the studio behind Psychonauts and Grim Fandango and a bunch of great games, Costume Quest. Well, they had this thing that I saw just pop up on my Twitter feed, and I was like, oh, what's this? Amnesia Fortnite. I better check it out. And basically every year they have this, they've had this internal development process called Amnesia Fortnite, where they sit down and they divide the company into four different teams, and each team works on a game for 2 weeks and comes up with a prototype of the game at the end of 2 weeks, a fortnight. And this year they decided that they'd pair up with Humble Bundle, and if people donated some money, some of the money would go to Double Fine, some of the money would go to Humble Bundle, and some of it would go to Child's Play charity. And if you donated, you'd get a couple prototypes from some of their older games, and you'd be able to vote on which of the four games you'd like to see prototyped over the next 2 weeks. And then after that, a couple days ago, the top four games were chosen. I was really rooting for this one game called Kaiju Pile Driver, where you play as a Godzilla knockoff fighting corporate stooges in cities. And another game called, I forget what it's called, but basically you have to escape. It's a stealth game where you have to escape an office building after you've pooped your pants without embarrassing yourself.
That's called my everyday life, man.
That's fantastic.
An odor-based stealth game it was billed as. So they have these four games that they're working on. I think they might be doing five games because the fifth game that was up there was really close. And they are live streaming the development process. So you can watch starting at 2, I believe it's 2 p.m. Pacific time. They start streaming what they're doing on the projects. And it's just a really cool insight into how Double Fine makes their games. And it's really enjoyable to watch.
I think that's a pretty neat idea.
Also, Tim Schafer made a really hilarious video introing Amnesia Fortnite. So if you still don't really understand it, just look up Tim Schafer Amnesia Fortnite. It's pretty great.
Awesome.
Will do.
So, Hunter, you just mentioned that there's been some new details on Bungie's next game. Have you had a chance to look that article over?
Yes. It looks
what's all the hype about?
I know this sounds so ambiguous, but it just sounds cool. I mean, I got the summary here. Our story begins 700 years from now in the last city on Earth, in a solar system littered with the ruins of man's golden age. A massive, mysterious alien ship hangs overhead like a second moon. It goes on and on of, you know, saying about how mysterious this place is, and the protagonists are the knights tasked with guarding the last bastion of humanity against these alien invaders. And you know, it sounds at first like your typical alien invasion type of game, but just taking examples from previous games of Bungie, you know, I worked with Halo and whatnot, you know, they've the talent there can turn this tired mantra into something amazing, and they mentioned somewhere in the article that they want to turn this the game's called Destiny, by the way. They want to turn Destiny's universe into something as expansive and beloved as Star Wars, and you know that's no easy task. But if Bungie can do it with Halo, I think they can do it again with Destiny. and I wish him the best.
That teaser image concept art looks really cool. So do you really think this game is going to be an MMO? And if so, is that going to impact how you think you're going to play it or not?
Yeah, I'm not really all that much of an MMO fan, but, you know, it just really depends on the gameplay. I've never been much of an MMO fan because I don't think that it's missing character development, and I think a lot of them miss character development and miss story development that's so deep and integrated into the more linear experiences on FPS shooters and action games and whatnot. But if Bungie can pull it off, I'm willing to wait until they release more footage about it before I make any specific decisions.
Okay. And just to be clear, this is leaked. These are leaked details, so it hasn't been officially unveiled yet.
Yeah. Well, right. it was leaked, and then Bungie said, "Go ahead, take a." Some details were leaked, and then Bungie actually released the image. So
yeah, Bungie did confirm that it is all from the game.
So right. It's a combination of both. But yeah, I'm not an MMO guy either, and I'm not necessarily a huge Bungie or Halo fan, but you got to be willing to try new things. So I'd probably give it a shot.
It looks pretty neat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, I don't really know what to say about it that you already said, that you didn't already say. I mean, so it just looks cool, and I'm excited to get some more information on it.
All right. I pulled up a couple of other articles that I'd like to talk about briefly, if that's okay with you guys. They recently posted an article today. Jim Riley posted it. It features Fuse's box art. You know, this game used to be called Overstrike. It had this fun cartoonish aspect to it, but the article just is just disappointing. It hits the nail on the head on something that's been happening to this game over the course of its development. You know, it went from this very cartoonish and outlandish reality to this. You know, it just looks a lot like other sci-fi shooters and
generic.
Yeah,
it's a dusty alien sci-fi shooter thing.
It's just so disappointing. I mean, they say that the game is so focused on character development, and yet the box art cuts off half of their faces, like it's just about the weapons and this annoying orange tone, and just looks so. Serious looking.
It breaks my heart. This stinks of EA. I'm sorry. I'm not normally one of those people that buy into that, but Insomniac was so amazing and creative with their IPs. I'm extremely disappointed in this game, and I really thought Overstrike looked really cool.
It could still be really cool, and some of the stuff in it is really neat. It actually kind of looks a lot like Borderlands to me. But we'll see, like, if they can actually make it interesting and not just a Borderlands clone, because at this point, that's kind of what it looks like. But we'll see. I don't know. I agree with the box art. Like, that is just crappy box art. Compared to Resistance 3 was their last box art. Someone tweeted today, Sumit Sarkar from Polygon tweeted, like, a comparison of the two, and it's just ridiculous, because Resistance 3's box art is incredible. And then this is their next box art, and it's what it is. It's awful.
I'll still play the game, because I'm an Insomniac fan, and I think that the gameplay will probably be fun, and I imagine the weapons will be crazy and fun. But I kind of was looking forward to that, you know, that cartoony gameplay, I guess.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And
what else?
The last one that I pulled up is why I put Borderlands 2, or why I put down Borderlands 2 by Tim Turry, and just goes to show you just how a great game like Borderlands 2 can be overshadowed by ensuing release dates. And I mean, you have Black Ops, you have Halo 4, got Assassin's Creed 3, and, you know, when Borderlands 2 first came out, you know, people were playing it nonstop, but, you know, now it's, nobody seems to be playing it, and it's kind of disappointing. It's a really great game. It kind of, echoes what I saw, way back in 2007, where, you had this, game called Time Shift, and, you know, it looked really cool, and I played the demo, was engrossed in it, but Halo 3 was right on the horizon. Nobody paid it much attention, and, you know, I'm kind of disappointed to see that not very many people still are playing Borderlands 2, and simply because it just happened to release prior to big releases.
I think people might go back to it, like, after all these big releases are done coming out. Like, that's kind of my plan. That's one of the games that I've wanted to go back to, so.
I think that's kind of, I mean, I might be wrong on this, but I think that's kind of what happened to the first Borderlands. I mean,
right.
It sold a lot, and then it kind of, the buzz kind of died down, and then it kind of, it sustains itself. It's one of those classic co-op experiences, and there aren't too many of those.
Yeah, I'm not sure what to think. I mean, I'm not done with the game, but I do admit I'm finding a hard time finding time to play it more. But I certainly want to. You know, I want to go back and finish it. I want to finish everybody's playthrough, but I haven't even finished my first playthrough yet, so we'll see. Anybody going to play the Mass Effect Omega DLC?
Oh, yeah, I am all over that.
Downloaded and ready to go.
Nice. I'm happy with my story and how it ended. I'm done with Mass Effect.
Forever?
No, not forever. With that story, with Shepard's story, I'm done with it.
So you're not going to play the Omega DLC?
I've never played any Mass Effect DLC and never regretted it.
Oh, man.
Oh, you're... Daniel.
What a way
to
break all of our hearts, dude.
We used to love you.
I'm just a curmudgeon.
So I feel we should at least mention the Wii U. Has anybody had any hands-on time with it, or even desire to have any hands-on time with it?
I don't know what that is.
No. The new console from Nintendo? Not the mini Wii that's going to be available in Canada only.
What's Nintendo?
It's a high-definition console that's
I heard about this Mario guy, you know? He's like a plumber or something. I don't know what that's all about.
Jeremy, there are words.
Say that again.
There are words coming out of your mouth. They just don't seem relevant anymore.
I know, right? Okay, but seriously, what do you guys? How do you feel about it?
I'm just not. It's not something I'm interested in. I mean, the hardware seems okay. But it doesn't have the games really to back up a new purchase for me.
Yeah.
You know? That the games sell the console, and right now the console doesn't have anything new or compelling for me to buy into it.
In the Wii U's defense, though, the Xbox 360 was going through that problem, too, at the very first. The same thing with the PS3, you know? I think it's just going through growing pains, to tell you the truth.
It'll sell really well, and there'll be plenty of people buying the Wii U, but just kind of like the Wii, there's not much on it that I'm interested in at this point, so.
I think it'll sell okay. I don't think that people aren't lining up to buy them like they were before. Right now you can get them on eBay for the same price you can at retail, and they're not hard to find at stores.
No, apparently not, yeah.
And, you know, they're more expensive. I think it's cool. I mean, I probably will get one eventually, like when a Zelda game comes out, maybe. But I'm not into the gamepad gimmick controller. I think that really is kind of silly. I mean, I think it's cool. Like, I think if the Vita and PS3 teamed up to do that once in a while, it would be neat. But not as a portion of every game. You know, I think that's just kind of, I don't know.
Can you take the tablet part of the Wii U and take it with you and use that as a portable device, or?
You can go
about
15 feet by most people's accounts.
Mm. Yeah.
So, and that's not even through a wall, so you can't even take it in the bathroom or in your bedroom with you. You know, the big thing was your parents can watch TV and then you can move your game to the Wii U handheld, which is true, but you can't go in your room and do it unless your room is right next to the TV, or you live in a studio apartment. I don't know. It seems to me like it's a lot of half measures once again, where the tech is just okay. The gamepad is just okay. I mean, it's not even an HD screen on the gamepad, and it doesn't have a lot of great tech in it. I think that they made a mistake again, and I do think that they'll sell well enough where it's not going to lose them money, but it's not going to be anything close to what the Wii is, otherwise.
No, it's not going to sell as well as the Wii.
I mean, nothing probably ever will, but...
Well, I mean, to me it feels like... I mean, the very fact that they felt the need to use Wii in the title for their new console means that they were banking on that for sell it more,
mm-hmm.
instead of having it sell on its own merits, and... Not only that, but the people who they were appealing to with the Wii are not going to want another console, the Wii U. I mean, casual gamers aren't going to be early adopters for this thing. And that's why they've been trying to get the hardcore market with, oh, we have third-party support now for all the games that you... already have played, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're saying, well, so when the next generation of, Xbox and the next PlayStation console come out, we're probably going to have most of the third-party games that come out, but, I mean, it seems to me like it's too little to justify it.
I think that the next generation PlayStation and Xbox hardware is going to be so far advanced that third-party developers, they might have the best of intention right now, but when it comes down to spending, if they're going to have to spend an extra $20 to $30 million just to develop a whole different game for the Wii U, I don't think they're going to do it. I mean, they didn't for the Wii, so what makes them think they're going to the next time?
I mean, All I can think of is the Unreal Engine 4 demo, that trailer that kind of showed off that engine, mm-hmm. and thinking back to E3 when Watch Dogs was unveiled,
mm-hmm.
and all I can think is that are the games that are going to be using Unreal Engine 4, are they going to be on the Wii U, or are they going to be on the more powerful Xbox 720 Durango, or whatever.
Well, even if they are on the Wii U,
thank God they're not making that.
Even if they are on the Wii U, it's going to be an inferior version. I mean, they'll probably be developed, like Unreal games specifically, especially Epic Unreal games, will be developed for the new Xbox. They'll be performed fairly well and ported, for the 360 or for the PlayStation, and then they'll be just whatever for the Wii, if they can do it at all.
And that's what consumers have already been getting out of the Wii for years now, with the Call of Duty ports. It's just like Call of Duty on the Xbox 360, except it's not.
Yeah. I think Nintendo, I don't know, I'm a little bit... It'll be interesting to see how their future goes. They started out as a company that made playing cards and had sex motels. I think maybe they might need to go back to their roots.
I'd like to touch on what you said there, Jack, with the casual market not really getting engaged with the Wii U. I mean, I'm looking at an image of it right now, and I think Nintendo, it kind of hit an uncanny valley between what a hardcore gaming console is supposed to be and what a casual gaming console is supposed to be like. And I never thought that such a distinction would be able to be made, but looking at the Wii U, it's like, well, what can I take this, is this emotion, like, it's just hard to even know what I'm looking at first. Whereas with the Wii, it's simple. You just put the nunchuck in your hand and you're good to go. You just play your games. But here it's like, is it Do I move? Is it a motion control sensor thing at the same time? Do I touch it with my hands, like with the tablet, or...
You know, when the Wii came out, I remember all the older people, middle-aged people, even the younger people that weren't into video games, that around the community that I lived in and around work in the grocery store, I was constantly hearing things about the Wii. Now, even when I ask people about the Wii U, the majority of them don't even know that it came out. And every now and then, one of them will say, oh, yeah, that's that little tablet thing that you hook up to your Wii, right? And it's like, no, it's actually a whole new, you know, a whole new system.
Yeah, the Game Informer guys did a whole video on that, like, where they just went out and asked people about the Wii U, and most of the people didn't even know what it was, didn't know anything about it.
So I think that, I don't know, I think Nintendo definitely did made some mistakes in their marketing and just the way they approached it, and I think that, you know, I think they'll always have their first-party games, and they're always going to, you know, sell like crazy, but...
Well, and here's what I think. I draw a comparison between Nintendo and Square Enix, where they're both just kind of stuck in old mindsets, and they're not really willing to branch out into and like. And this is a poor comparison. Let me just say that the Nintendo was amazing in the Nintendo era, the Super Nintendo era. They kept going strong with the N64, and heck, I really loved the GameCube. But with the Wii, I feel like they got lucky with the Wii, and they rode that gravy train, and then couldn't figure out how to recapture that with another console, because the Wii, like, just like how do you continue that after the Wii? Like, the Wii is one of the best selling consoles ever, and that's because they tapped into a market they didn't know existed before. Like, that whole casual thing.
I do think that was their luck. That was right place, right time, and having Oprah talk about it and having all these other people talk about it just it made it for them. I think they did get very lucky with the Wii.
And I was just going to say, and they didn't know where to go with that, and so they tried this new system that's really similar to the old one, but they instead of appealing to either the casual market or the hardcore market, they tried to appeal to both, and the console is just sitting, like you said, Hunter, it's sitting in an uncanny valley of the market.
They don't know if they're really appealing to the hardcore or the mainstream. It's kind of like they're trying to appeal to both, and in doing that, they've appealed to neither.
And I think
exactly,
you know, the mainstream, I think they've caught on. They've become smarter. You know, they're the ones that don't mind having those $1 to $5 apps, and they call them games, and they can play those play them on their smartphone. They can play them on Facebook, they can play them in their browser. You can't do that with even the Wii U. Even if you buy that and you buy that tablet, there's no games like that to play on that tablet, as far as I know, anyway. You know, Nintendo is saying that they are not going to be selling apps. They're not going to be selling, you know, cheap games. It's just not something they're interested in. And you know, I think that the casual market has moved on to that. They don't care about.
They're still going to have the virtual console.
But you're not going to sell Angry Birds. And if they do, they're not going to sell it for a dollar.
No.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see if the whole tablet peripheral, how long that lasts. Because the most the controller that you use on your console is a pretty big identifier of whether or not you're a casual or a hardcore gamer, you know. Because when you think about casual gaming, you think about the Wii U remote. When you're a hardcore gamer, you think about a PC keyboard or one of the controllers for the PS3 or Xbox 360. So I think, do you think Nintendo will like release a Wii U emote peripheral thing to, you know, tell casual gamers that, hey, this is a casual console too, because, you know, we made this whole Wiimote thing. You know, it's a lot similar to the Wii, so, you know, come and buy those games.
They'll just market it different. I mean, it's the same thing, like, for Black Friday, they were giving away free Wii U's at Old Navy's to...
Free Wii U's?
For the first, like, 50 people or something.
Oh, really?
Like, they're just a little audience with their marketing. Yeah. What I see, like, the problem with Nintendo is that they see the future of gaming so differently from everybody else in the industry right now. And I mean, it's hard to say they're wrong when they're doing pretty well still. They're selling a buttload of systems with the 3DS, DS, Wii, and Wii U.
But they lost so much money the last quarter, so much, and they don't have anything to fall back on, like Microsoft. <That was something. laughs>
But the problem is they see the future of gaming. They appeal to the mainstream by putting in gimmicks like the Wiimote, whereas, like, me personally, I see the future of gaming on the tablet, and I see games like The Walking Dead coming to tablets, and that being the future of gaming. Personally, that's just me. I think The Walking Dead is a very accessible game for anybody, and that coming to tablet is that crossover of hardcore games coming to a mainstream audience, and the mainstream audience kind of catching up to the hardcore, because they're not all terrible gamers. They want to play meaningful games. They don't all just want to play Angry Birds. Mm-hmm. And Nintendo doesn't get that. They're very patronizing to the audience. They just want to sell toys.
Well, I do know one thing. This is by far the longest discussion we've ever had on Nintendo.
So I just wanted to throw one last thing about Nintendo out there. But the Wii U to me seems like, and I'm not hating on Nintendo. I love Nintendo. I love that it's willing to take risks and do things like put out the Wii in the first place. I mean, what other company would do that, right? But the Wii U just seems like they took so many half measures and didn't live up to what it could have been. Like, for example, the virtual console library that you had on the Wii doesn't transfer over to the Wii U.
Right.
And
stupid.
Exactly. It's little things like that where it's like, really? You couldn't have made it do that? Or just things where they didn't launch the console with a defining game. I mean, they came out with the new Super Mario Brothers U. I think I got that title right.
I think you got it right, yeah.
Yeah, you kind of think you did.
But it's, I mean, yeah, it's a new Mario game, but...
But there was just a new Mario game on the DS not long ago, and not that long ago there was a new Mario game on the normal Wii.
Right, it's the... Like, I mean, Luigi's Mansion for the GameCube, that was something completely different that gamers hadn't played before, and that was a launch title on the GameCube. And that game is really, really good. It's still fun today. And I'm not saying that New Super Mario Bros. U isn't good. I'm just saying that it's not a defining generational leap like Luigi's Mansion was or Ico was for the PlayStation 2. There aren't any of those games out there, and it's the same problem they had with the 3DS launch. There are no defining games, and it's a horribly missed opportunity for them to establish themselves as this is the next generation console, because it doesn't feel like that right now.
Yeah, I think they should just stick with games. Even the 3DS, like the 3DS has recovered, but not because of the 3D.
No.
You know, that's the...
It's because of the price drop.
It's because of the price drop, but even the games that work great on it, or that sell a lot, they really don't use the 3D feature because it's It's just silly.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. Good conversation, gents.
Yep.
Yes.
We should do our shout-outs.
We definitely should do our Jacked Up Indian Mojo Show community shout-out.
Shout-out.
I say we let our distinguished guests go first this week. Hunter, you up for it?
Yeah. I'd like to give my shout-out to Cameron Kotcher Co. He recently posted a blog about why glitches are great. He just goes into hilarious detail of how he liked his glitches in Skyrim and Red Dead Redemption, you know, and how this lady turned into a mountain lion and started trying to kill his horse and eventually killed him, and you know how that was just freaking hilarious. And he ends this whole blog on, you know, just saying, I'm here to say that not all glitches need fixing. And I tend to agree with him. You know, you have different types of glitches these days. You know, you have your game breaking ones, you know, where you can't complete a mission because an NPC didn't load into the environment, or you accidentally killed somebody who mattered a lot to a certain quest, so you can't undertake it. But and glitches like that, you know, definitely should be patched right away as soon as they come up. But, you know, other glitches that just add a little spice to unintended side effects to such a huge game world, you know, I think can be beneficial, you know, because just watching YouTube video after YouTube video of giants smashing guys like thousands of feet into the air, that was just freaking hilarious every single time, you know. Whoops. Was something I said?
No. Is the ship going down?
anyway.
That's the panic room.
Yeah, there you go. Just little things like that. You know, a lady turning into a cougar and taking it down, or a recent one in Assassin's Creed 3 where Connor is doing the splits on a pallet, you know, and just little things like that, you know. Glitches don't necessarily have to be fixed, as long as they don't interfere with the gameplay. And I'd personally like to see an option in a game where, you know, having glitches is an option. You know, you can go to the options menu and turn on, you know, minor glitches on and off. But if you turn it on, you know, you still, you know, for a game like Skyrim, you'd still have people being launched into the air, you know, when they get hit by a giant, you know, but you could turn that option off if you wanted a more immersive experience. So that's my shout out.
Good one. All right, I'll go next. I'm going to give my shout out to a member that's gotten many shout outs and deserved every one. Also, a 2-time guest on the Jacked Up Indian Mojo Show, the one, the only, Hissed for His blog, Modern Dating, written in true his style in a way that only he can. He talks about the joys of pre-order bonuses in a very anecdotal way, using the premise of going out on a date with a woman. However, you have to put in codes every time you want to access a different portion of the date. I thought it was very funny, very well written, and I think everybody should read it. It's hilarious.
It really was. Not really blogs that made me laugh, but his, good job, you know.
He's a great writer.
That was just...
Yeah, he is.
That was great.
That was an awesome blog.
Daniel?
So I picked for this week a clever blog by XL9. It's just a top 10 list, but it's about the most insane characters in gaming, which is pretty unique concept for a top 10 list. And let me just read a quick description of the King of All Cosmos from Katamari. He's a godlike being that has random mood swings and dresses like the Burger King if he was born in the Victorian times and raised by the Cheshire Cat on a strict diet of shrooms and LSD. That's just the taste of this blog. So read the rest of the blog to get more stuff like that, because it was really good.
That's
well
a pretty
done,
good description.
XL9. It is.
And Jack. Jack, last but not least, who is your shout-out?
Well, I think we pretty much all wanted to shout this one out. It's Erica's Monumental Adventure by Zachary Plige. Pliggy?
like a...
P-L-I-G-G-E.
He was a really big fundraiser on Team GIO for Extra Life, and he wrote a wonderful blog about how a girl that he worked, a female child that he worked with over the past 2 years passed away.
Station. I was kind of confused.
Jack, I don't know if you could have said that more awkwardly.
I probably could. Never underestimate my power to terribly word things when I'm talking. So anyway, he wrote a wonderful, touching blog about this little lady that he knew for the last 2 years passing away, and how he wanted to do something to remember her by, kind of a parting gift. And one of her favorite games to play was the Minecraft version of, Xbox 360 version of Minecraft. Oh gosh, I'm terrible at saying things. Anyway, it's great, and it goes into what made Erica so special to him, and why he loves kids, and the details of what he wants to do, which is basically build a golden heart to remember her in the adventure mode of Minecraft, which, if you haven't played Minecraft, there are two modes. There's creative mode, where you can have infinite resources of anything, and then there's adventure mode, where you have to go off and find those resources, and there are monsters, and it's a lot harder. But he's going to need 414 gold ingots and 54 diamond blocks. It's going to take him a while, and he welcomes anyone who wants to just help him build it in the game.
I would say that Zachary, I think that it would be awesome if you kept us updated on, and I know you plan on doing that, but kept us updated on your progress. If I played Minecraft on 360 or Minecraft at all, I would certainly be there to help.
Yeah, the blog doesn't have a ton of comments, so I don't know how much support he might... Like, I don't know if he feels like he's getting a lot of support, but hopefully he hears this and knows that...
Well, here's what I think. I think that... Him up. That in a couple of weeks we should invite him on the show to talk a little bit more about this, give us an update, and then just maybe see if he can get more people involved, if that's all right with you guys.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Cool. All right. I'll send him an invitation and chat with him a bit.
All right.
Awesome.
Oh, and he's also updating the adventure, like what happens in the game as they're mining and looking for these treasures to build the monument for Erica.
That really is a touching story, you know, and it just goes to show you how much of a classic Minecraft is, you know, because, you know, people have done various different things with it, and not just in creating stuff, you know, people propose marriage through the game, you know, and so, you know, it's just, you know, really, really touching to hear that a guy is going to go through all that effort, you know, and try to, you know, make sure that you know, his friend is remembered.
Yeah.
Well, let's get Zach on the show, and we'll talk more about it. And yeah, very touching blog. Great job.
Okay. All right. So that was episode 53 of the Jacked Up Indian Mojo Show with special guest Crew Hunter. Thanks for coming on the show, Hunter.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks to Jeremy Brown and Jack Gardner for coming on, as usual.
Didn't have a choice.
But it was nice of Jack to actually grace us with his presence this week.
Yeah, Jack.
That's only because he sent me death threats.
Only because he wasn't hanging out with Game Informer people, you know. His real friends.
We just missed you, Jack, that's all.
Yeah, that's mostly it.
Yep. Alright. I am Indy Jones, and I will see you all next week. Stay classy, Game Informer.
Thank you for stopping by.
I love milk.
Milk. Milk was a great, bad choice.
Great parting words there, Jack. I was only joking when I said I'd like to mash every tooth in your head.